Willie Nelson is not just a country music icon, he's an American music icon. Joe Nick Potoski's been writing about the redheaded stranger for 35 years. Now, Potoski has written a comprehensive biography called Willie Nelson, An Epic Life. Joe Nick Potoski told Steve Paulson that Nelson first found success in Nashville as a songwriter. Took a while to establish himself as a singer.
There were two factors. One is the pecking order in Nashville was very specific. If you were a songwriter, they wanted you to be a songwriter. If you were a producer, they wanted you to be a producer. If you were a performer, they wanted you to be a performer. That was one part of the proposition. The other was, going back even into the 1950s, Willie had a reputation as singing behind the beat. He phrased like a jazz singer. And in country music, this was a no-no. You were supposed to sing right on the beat, like someone like Ray Price or Ernest Tubb would. The one exception that I could find before Willie of a Nashville star who didn't sing on the beat was Hank Williams. And Hank said, "I don't know what the beat is. I just sing, and I'm playing along with the music." In Willie's case, Willie knew what he was doing, but other musicians, when he would sit in with them, they would laugh at him. "Man, can't you stay on the beat? Can't you keep up?" And yet Joe Allison, the head of Liberty Records, who signed Willie to a performing contract in 1961, and largely he signed him because he was a great songwriter and he could get dibs on his songs. But Allison recognized Willie as a phraser and made the comment, "He sings like Sinatra." Hmm. And in fact, on his first album that he did for Liberty, it was arranged by an arranger in Los Angeles who had worked with Sinatra and had worked with other pop and jazz singers. He has musicians that are on that record that are both country musicians. But he also had the jazz players Red Callender on bass and Earl Palmer on drums backing him up. So Liberty kind of understood what he was, but he still didn't sell worth a darn. So he ended up going back to Nashville and signing with RCA.
Hmm. Can you give me an example of a song of Willie Nelson singing behind the beat?
Well, I think one of the best examples of Willie singing behind the beat would be his version of Crazy.
Which, of course, he had written for Patsy Cline, and she had turned it into an enormous hit, but he had done his own version of it.
I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so blue.
This was his second big hit. This is the one that really busted everything through. And when he first started talking about putting this song together, a fellow that he worked with in Houston named Paul Buskirk, who was a real mentor, turned him on to Django Reinhardt and actually backed him on some recording sessions, talked about writing a song like the great Floyd Tillman did. And Floyd was the first composer of cheating songs in country music and a very much of an influence on Willie's style. And Floyd had done a song called I Want My Baby Back. And it starts with this pause, baby, and then there's a pause, and then the song moves on. And that kind of phrasing there, Willie did on Crazy, and sings behind it, and then he catches up, and then he gets behind and catches up. He knows what he's doing. And most of the backing musicians knew what he was doing in the studio in Nashville. But other people, they were thinking, "Man, that guy can't keep a beat."
So his version of Crazy was never a big hit then?
No, it was, again, part of the demos that he did at the Monument Records studio in Nashville in order to get his songs heard by the producers and the performers.
I'm crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
What was Willie Nelson's first big hit as a singer?
Really, his first hit was in 1975 on the album Redheaded Stranger. The first single that came off of it was Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
In twilight glow I see blue eyes crying in the rain. When we kissed goodbye and parted. like a dying ember. And only memories remain. And through the ages I'll remember blue eyes crying in the rain.
So did he start to assume the aura that he has today? I mean, sort of this larger-than-life figure who, to some degree, was the voice of country music?
You know, I think that was always in process. What's interesting to me is the public perception is he had to have his house burned down outside of Nashville to retreat to Texas in 1971, which is where his gig money was always made. And there he made a stand first in a rural area called Bandera in the Hill Country. And then he moved to Austin in 1972 and got busy. And he basically created his own sound and brought the hippies and the rednecks together. But my research showed me that all this was already in process during his Nashville years. That in 1964, with his songwriting royalty money, he bought a big spread outside of Nashville called Ridgetop, and it was a farm. He kept horses, he raised hogs, he raised crops, and it was basically his retreat. And through one of his sidemen, Wade Ray, he learned about Astara, which was kind of a metaphysical, not quite a religion, but a path. And he and Johnny Bush used to read Khalil Gibran in the libraries and Edgar Casey back even beginning in the early 60s.
Edgar Casey, the psychic.
Exactly. So by the late 60s, what you've got in Ridgetop is you've got Willie's mama and daddy who divorced very early, living on either side of them with their spouses. You've got band members living nearby on this property. You've got friends. You've got kin. You've got what is basically a hippie commune. But at the time, no one knew. Everybody thought hippies were just a San Francisco thing. And no one in Tennessee sure knew what a commune was. So it really took coming to Texas and then consorting with hippies openly and overtly, as well as his fan base, which we could call rednecks, that it became obvious this guy is an out-of-the-box thinker.
Well, that is so strange how he was able to appeal to these seemingly two totally different audiences, hippies and rednecks, who often hated each other. How did he do it?
Well, I think it speaks to his appeal today that he has this talent of people being able to project things on him, and more often than not, whatever they're projecting on him, they're right. And what he found was in Austin, in particular, as he started noticing at his regular honky-tonk gigs, hippies were showing up. And that was no easy thing because hippies risked getting their ass kicked by showing up in places like that. But Willie made a concerted effort after playing a couple benefits to play a place in Austin called the Armadillo World Headquarters. And it was definitely a hippie joint. It was a concert hall that was run by a collective. And they had already been bringing in West Coast country rock bands like, the Flying Burrito Brothers, Rye Cooter, acts like that. So they were hip to, country could be cool. And certainly when Eddie Wilson, the head honcho of the Armadillo, had met Willie, he was expecting him. He was anticipating him. He had heard the album called Yesterday's Wine, which was a big flop for RCA in 1972. But it was an album that was about a man contemplating mortality. And pretty weighty stuff for country music. No wonder it was a flop. But hippies did hear it and could recognize this guy's a deep thinker. So when Willie showed up at the Armadillo wanting to play a gig, the Armadillo welcomed him with open arms, and basically he brought two different audiences to the gig. The Armadillo crowd, who were there because Greasy Wheels had opened up, and they were tolerant enough that this guy seemed to be cool. He had an earring in his ear, and his hair was a little bit shaggy. And Willie's traditional crowd that had been following him throughout the 60s, they ventured into the Armadillo because they wanted to hear Willie Nelson. And he gave both crowds what they wanted, which was country music, but it was really rocked up. It was out of the box. It had deep lyrics. and he could match any rock band and getting down and going on a long jam. So it was the perfect situation for him. And through that, he cobbled this brand new audience that Nashville had no clue was out there.
She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good time and man. She loves him in spite of his ways. She don't understand.
Well, one of the remarkable things about Willie Nelson is not only is he a mega country star, but he's not just a country star. I mean, he's a guy who's managed to cross genres. And, I mean, it's actually kind of hard to define what music he does. I mean, do you think he changed the nature of country music?
I think Willie definitely did change the nature of country music. And really, if you want to look at it with perspective, American music. Because he always seemed to do things the hard way and go out of his way to do it the hard way. When he made Redheaded Stranger in 1975, he had a band that was playing three-hour shows, two drums, two basses, and they could jam as good as the Allman Brothers or Charlie Daniels Band. So what album did he deliver to Columbia? A stripped-down, spare acoustic album that clocked in at 35 minutes. It had nothing to do with his live show. Similarly, after One of the Outlaws, he delivered an album to Columbia that had nothing to do with country music. And that was Stardust, a collaboration that he had done with the great organist and pianist Booker T. Jones, the head of Booker T. and the MGs. And they basically met each other in Malibu, California, and came up with a list of their favorite songs from the Great American Songbook that they'd grown up with in the 30s and 40s.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights dreaming of a song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new and each kiss an inspiration.
And again, throughout his career, he's done whatever the label tells him not to do.
Okay, one final question. I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think is the greatest Willie Nelson song?
Oh, boy. You know, my greatest Willie Nelson song, it depends on the day and the time and the mood. I think right now the one song that stands the test of time for me because it gets to the heart of what I would call white man's blues is the song Nightlife, because it really is his life. When he recorded it for the first time in Houston, Texas, it marked a sea change in the music he had been doing and the recordings he had made. Somehow he became very sophisticated, very introspective. And boy, every time I hear that song, it just goes straight to my heart.
When the evening sun goes down, you will find me hanging round. The nightlife ain't a good life, but it's my life. Many people just like me dreaming of old used to be's, and the nightlife ain't a good life, but it's my life.
Joe Nick Patosky is the author of Willie Nelson, An Epic Life. Patosky also wrote the liner notes for the new Willie Nelson box set, One Hell of a Ride. Joe Nick Patosky spoke with Steve Paulson.